Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to the sound of universal compassion. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello, and thanks for joining the program, where we're going through the mind training like the rays of the sun. A text on how to train the mind in Buddhism by the Tibetan teacher Nangpa Pel. Last week we started on the preliminary meditations, the first of which is on the precious human rebirth. In Buddhism, our human combination of body and mind is regarded as the best to practice the path to enlightenment. But of course, not everybody knows about the Buddha's teachings, and lots of people who do don't believe in them. A precious human rebirth is described as rebirth with 8 freedoms and 10 endowments, all of which we discussed in our last program together. Comparatively few people can say that they have all these freedoms and endowments, or even some, and of those who can say so, many don't devote much of their time to practice. Therefore, to obtain a precious human rebirth and make the best use of it falls only to a very few, perhaps one or two. Most of us can only try to do the best we can. Now, just to recap, the 8 freedoms are freedom from being born as an animal, a hungry ghost, a hell being, or a long-lived god, and that's 4. And then, also not being born into a family or situation where you end up holding wrong views, what His Holiness refers to as distorted antagonistic thinking, or in a place where the Buddhist teachings were not prevalent. Then the last 2 are freedom from lacking some of your faculties, like not being able to talk or having some mental problems. And finally, as the text so colorfully put it, being born as a barbarian in a remote region. I once heard of a New Zealander who went to pay respects to one of the high but very traditional Tibetan lamas, who asked him where he came from. "New Zealand," said the visitor. "Oh, that's a barbarian land," said the lama. Perhaps he had the idea that this far-flung group of islands was a place where people wrapped themselves in sheep hides, ate meat raw, and prostrated before a golden ram. Who knows? But whatever he had heard about Kiwis, he obviously didn't consider us very cultured people. Luckily, some of the lamas have visited our little bit of paradise, and one very high lama, Kirti Tensab Rinpoche, thought it the best place to practice the Dharma in the world, and especially in Nelson. So there you go. Then, running through the 10 endowments, or enrichments as His Holiness calls them, we can recall the rhyme, being born human, having faith, in a central land with all faculties and no heinous crimes. The Buddha has come, has taught, and the teachings remain and are practiced. There are benefactors. Now, if all these conditions, the 8 freedoms and 10 endowments, come together for us, we can most easily practice the Dharma. But they don't all materialize at one time so easily. So as we quoted His Holiness in the last program, we should at least aim to try and get the 8 freedoms. Now, that's the traditional way of looking at this precious human rebirth. But according to one of the leading Buddhist teachers in America, we in the West have a particular way of avoiding looking closely at the rarity of the opportunity we have found. And so we tend to slide away from serious practice that could make use of the full meaning of this life. However, before we continue with this consideration, let's set our motivation for the program today. Through participating in this program, may I attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings everywhere. This, of course, is a bodhicitta motivation, the best of all. So let's generate that as our purpose today. However, if you really can't, then at least think of your own liberation from suffering. Thank you. On the website www.tibetanbuddhistaltar.org, Jetsuma Akam Lamo, the American lady who has been recognized as the reincarnate of a great Tibetan yogini, gives a teaching on how we Westerners fool ourselves into wasting our precious human rebirth by thinking that because we have a good life now, we will easily attain other good lives in the future. This is at least partly true, because in wealthy Western countries, we're mainly protected from directly seeing the real suffering of life. Most of the public knows that it is going to eat, she says. They may eat on welfare or caviar and pate, but they will eat. We know pretty much that if we are sick, there's a place that we can go to get help. Even if we get free help, still we can get help. It's true there are exceptions, but I'm thinking of the greater population. The greater population has a certain regimentation that it is accustomed to, things upon which it can rely. We really don't see too many people dying very young. Proportionally, there is less infant death and death by disease in young people than elsewhere. We see it, but somehow it's not a major part of the fabric of our lives, and so we find a way to work around that. We think that it's not a good reason to practice, because the chances are good that we will scoot through it okay, and even though we really do know that we might not be okay. It could be that we could die young or experience some suffering. Still, we think that the chances are that we will be okay. We've also been shielded from some of the more gruesome forms that suffering can take. We don't see a lot of gross deformity or retardation. We don't see a lot of things that are kept away from us, really for our protection, so it will be more pleasant. We don't like to think about the poverty that other people experience. And then she goes on, there's an idea that so long as we do our best and consistently stay good and improve, that predictably the next moment will be a little bit better. Now, I'm not exactly sure how that happened, but I think that it has to do with the fact that this is not, generally speaking, a culture that believes in cyclic death and rebirth. It is not a culture that understands that you have had many lifetimes before, and unless you achieve supreme realization, you will have many lifetimes yet to come. Instead, we look at the fabric of our lives, and we see that children eat, and they get a little bigger, and they eat some more, and they get a little bigger, and then they get a little smarter, and then there's a period of decline at the end of our lives. But we don't think about that too much. We think that things improve. Even if you have come to accept the idea of rebirth and that it is important, still the idea is that somehow I won't get worse than I am. We tell ourselves it's not going to get worse than it is right now. It's only going to improve because I'm going to continue to do well and I'm going to be good spiritually. I'm going to be a good person, and if I have already become a human being and I have these fortunate circumstances, then this is all that there is, so it's just going to get better. She goes on, we think this way because we don't understand how awesome the components of the phenomena that we experience are. We think that things are so stable, that the circumstances that we experience now are the sum total of all the learning that we've ever done, and all of the goodness that we've ever been involved in. All of the good and bad, it's all been worked out. Basically, I think that this belief is the result of an absolute marriage with the idea of linear progression. Therefore, we're not motivated to practice. But this is inconsistent with what the Buddha teaches. The Buddha teaches us that we are here through a miraculous set of circumstances, because we must have done something wonderful in the past. In order to hear the Buddha's teachings, in order to even have a shot at enlightenment, in order to not be suffering so much that it's possible to practice, to have a shot at listening to Dharma, to be able to think of helping others, we must have had an extremely fortunate past. We must have had wonderful circumstances and really have done some good, what they call good karma. However, according to the Buddha, we have lived incalculable aeons. From beginningless time, we've been doing this. We have experienced so many lifetimes that the causes that were begun during those times, many of them have not even actualized themselves. They're still seedlings within our mind stream. We have so many under the belt that we literally have accumulated the causes for rebirth in the highest and most fortunate state, and we have also accumulated causes for rebirth in the lowest and most difficult realms. We have all of these circumstances, and somehow, almost like a gambling wheel going around, we stopped at a precious human rebirth. And here we are experiencing this precious human rebirth. What makes it precious is that we have all of our faculties. We have the opportunity to practice the Buddha's teaching. What makes it precious is that we have a shot at attaining realization, and we aren't suffering too much to do it. We have the leisure to practice. Understand that finding this precious human rebirth is, as the Buddha taught, very similar to finding a precious jewel while sifting through garbage. It is that rare. Finding this precious human rebirth with these fortunate circumstances is as common as dust on the fingernail compared to dust on the earth. That's how many more options you had of other kinds of rebirths. If you understand how rare this birth is, you will find motivation to practice. But Westerners have a tremendous difficulty with that. Feeling that there is only linear progression, Westerners have a certain pridefulness that unfortunately says, well, if I have what it takes to get to this point, where I can think as I do and practice as I do and be as wonderful as I truly am, then surely I can keep that stuff going somehow and it will remain stable in that way. The Buddha says not. The Buddha says that there are specific reasons that you are here, and if you utilize this life to increase your merit, good karma, virtue, and value inherent within your mind stream, and if you purify your mind, thereby increasing its beauty and luminosity, then you will proceed on a path that will lead to supreme enlightenment. But think about how many people here in the West kid themselves about this. We feel safe in a life that is ever-changing. We feel permanent in the midst of impermanence, and we feel that we've got it knocked, and that we go up and down every day, and then we don't do anything to improve our state. Maybe we change a few things as a token gesture. We try to live a good life. We're nice to our kids. We're good, upstanding people. But in the end, we find that we've been sitting on top of a precious jewel and a fantastic opportunity, and at the end of our lives, we come to a realization that we've wasted it. What has happened is that it takes an enormous amount of good qualities, virtue, good karma, and merit to have gained such a life as this. And when we could have done something, when we had an opportunity to accomplish the Dharma, we didn't. The purpose of contemplating our precious human rebirth and its rarity is just this, to help us make a serious attempt to practice, and as Jetsuma says, to increase our merit, good karma, virtue, and value inherent within our mind stream, and to purify our mind, thereby increasing its beauty and luminosity. That actually is the direction we should be going if we're going to make this life meaningful. And that's why it's important to contemplate how precious and rare this human rebirth is. The Buddha described how difficult precious human rebirth is to get in the Balana Pandita Sutta, the Discourse on the Foolish and Wise. He described it like this. Suppose a man threw into the sea a yoke with one hole in it, and the east wind carried it to the west, and the west wind carried it to the east, and the north wind carried it to the south, and the south wind carried it to the north. Suppose there were a blind turtle that came up at the end of each century. What do you think, bhikkhus? Would that blind turtle put his neck into that yoke with one hole in it? He might, venerable sir, sometime or the other at the end of a very long period. Bhikkhus, the blind turtle would sooner put his neck into that yoke with a single hole in it than a fool, once gone to perdition, would take to regain the human state, I say. Why is that? Because there's no practicing of the Dharma there, no practicing of what is righteous, no doing of what is wholesome, no performance of merit. There, mutual devouring prevails, and the slaughter of the weak. I've taken this translation from the middle-length discourses of the Buddha by Bhikkhus Nanamoli and Bodhi. The Buddha's simile is intended to show how difficult it is to get another human rebirth once we've died and through our negative karma been born into a lower realm. So this is a real spur for us to practice the Dharma as best we can while we have this golden opportunity. Later on in the sutta, the Buddha indicates how a wise man, one who does practice the Dharma well, fares. He describes three characteristics of a wise man. He thinks good thoughts, speaks good words, and performs good actions. And the Buddha also describes three ways in which a wise man feels pleasure and joy in the present life, and which leads to happy rebirth in the coming lives. Firstly, when he's in company and people are talking about negative actions such as killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, and so on, he's happy because he knows he does not indulge in any of those things. Secondly, also when a bad man, the sutta says a robber culprit, is caught and brought before the king, or maybe in our case the law courts, who condemns him to various tortures, the wise man is happy for himself, as he knows that he personally has not committed such crimes. And thirdly, as the sutta says, when the wise man is on his chair or on his bed or resting on the ground, then the good actions that he did in the past, his good bodily, verbal, and mental conduct cover him, overspread him, and envelop him. Just as the shadow of a great mountain peak in the evening covers, overspreads, and envelops the earth, so too, when the wise man is on his chair, on his bed, or resting on the ground, then the good actions that he did in the past, his good bodily, verbal, and mental conduct cover him, overspread him, and envelop him. Then the wise man thinks, I have not done what is evil. I have not done what is cruel. I have not done what is wicked. I have done what is good. I have done what is wholesome. I have made myself a shelter from anguish. When I pass away, I shall go to the destinations of those who have not done what is evil, who have not done what is cruel, who have not done what is wicked, who have done what is good, who have done what is wholesome, who have made themselves a shelter from anguish. He does not sorrow, grieve, and lament. He does not weep, beating his breast, and become distraught. This is the third kind of pleasure and joy that a wise man feels here and now. So, to both make this precious human life meaningful and to set the stage, as it were, for the same kind of rebirth in the future, we have to train our minds to think positively, make sure our words are positive and kind, and our actions are non-harmful. The Tibetan tradition insists that we avoid the 10 non-virtuous actions, as the Buddha recommends in the Sutta, but also devotedly practice generosity, patience, and so on. Now, if we look into our minds and our behavior, do we find strong morality, great generosity, and great deal of patience? Or do we find a mix of virtue and non-virtue, but often more non-virtue? When I look back on my youth, long before I was a Buddhist, I was keen on fishing and killed many small creatures by impaling them on hooks and throwing them into the sea. I wasn't much good at actually catching fish, but in trying, I created many negative seeds on my mind. I also for a short time hunted with a bow and arrow and killed a small goat. Looking back on my life, I see these and many other deeds that make it very uncertain I will find a human rebirth after I die. Looking back at deeds like these, I am ashamed and can see how they could ripen into lower rebirths from which, as the Buddha says, it will be very difficult to return to the human realm, never mind a precious human rebirth. What about you? When you look into your memories, do you also find a long string of deeds that brought and will bring suffering? Or can you say that you are the wise person that created no negativities and are assured a happy coming rebirth? Namkar Pal's text quotes a verse by Ashva Ghosha, the Indian master, that goes like this. Whoever is rich in virtue has accumulated over countless eons. But he who, because of delusion, does not gather such treasure in this life, will in his lives to come be imprisoned in a house of woe, like a merchant returning empty-handed from the island of jewels. Without the path of 10 virtues, there is no way to obtain a human birth, without which there is no happiness and only suffering remains. Not to follow such a path is an act of supreme stupidity. Namkar Pal also quotes four stories from Geshe-pa Towa's text, Teachings by Example. The first concerns a farmer who turned up an earthworm while plowing a field. To his amazement, the earthworm prostrated to a nearby image of the Buddha. Says Pa Towa, it is equally rare for someone like us, just coming up from a bad state of rebirth, to turn up as a human being and do something positive and spiritually beneficial. Now, don't be too skeptical about an earthworm prostrating to the Buddha. When I was at the monastery in South India, the monks told me of a dog that used to wait before the assembly hall every morning, and when the doors were opened, would rush in before all the monks and make three prostrations to the big Buddha statue at the front of the hall. As far as I know, the monks have no reason to lie to me. But putting that aside, the second story is about a man without any legs sitting on a ledge. He loses his balance and falls, landing on the back of a wild ass behind him. The startled donkey gallops off with a man hanging on for dear life, shouting with glee. If I don't enjoy it now, when else will a cripple like me get the chance to ride on an ass? Likewise, Geshe Potowa writes, we should see how rare our lives are and take joyful advantage of them. Once a man from Tsang came to Lhasa, begins the third story. He had never eaten fish before, so when he then got the chance, he gorged himself on this rare treat. Naturally, it made him sick, but as he was about to vomit, he tied a rope around his neck so as not to waste any of what he'd eaten. We should be as unwilling to waste even a moment of our precious human lives. Then finally, the text tells of a family who were enjoying sweet buttered barley flour, a rare treat for Tibetans. The young son of the family plotted to get an extra share, so he hid what he had already been given behind his back and held out his hands as if he'd been overlooked. However, the family's dog spied the food behind the boy's back and inevitably snapped it up. The parents were not fooled, and the poor boy landed up with nothing after all. Says Geshe Potowa, we should take whatever opportunity we have to put the teachings into practice, rather than just simply trying to collect more. The text goes on to talk about contemplating the rarity of finding a human life, because it's so difficult to obtain. Namkha Pel writes, in general, the beings in the three bad rebirths are many, and that's the hell realm, the preta or hungry ghost realm, and the animal realm. But those with high status are few, and high status here means humans, demigods or god beings. Among those with high status in particular, it is rare to find those who are free from the eight states without leisure, and that's the eight freedoms we discussed earlier. Moreover, even amongst those who have found freedom and opportunity, those who are inclined towards the holy doctrine are as numerous as the stars in the daytime. Appreciating that the precious state of leisure and opportunity that we have found on this occasion is very meaningful and difficult to find, we must find the ways and means to generate the wish to extract its essence. In a broad sense, extracting the essence means to practice the holy doctrine. This is because we want happiness and dislike suffering. If any doubt arises about our ability to practice the doctrine, reflect on such external conditions as the presence of spiritual friends of the great vehicle and the opportunities of meeting them, and the internal condition of possessing this free and fortunate body as a basis. If you think of postponing your practice to future lives, remember that it is hard to find such leisure and opportunity again. If you think of putting off your practice for some months or years, this is also mistaken, because although death is assured, its time is uncertain. Among the ways of taking the essence, familiarizing yourself with the awakening mind is the principal and most excellent practice, and to do that, you should engage in the preliminaries for training in the awakening mind. Now, the awakening mind here refers, of course, to bodhicitta, and in the Mahayana tradition, this is regarded as the foremost practice. But whatever we can practice with the Buddha's teachings while we have this very precious human rebirth will be very beneficial. So if you can't practice bodhicitta, then find what is most conducive to your mind from the teachings and practice that. You certainly can't go wrong with the four immeasurables or meditations on loving kindness and compassion. Also, mindfulness and deep seeing leading to insight are very useful. These will all plant seeds for good experiences in the future, but as the Buddha himself said, an ethical lifestyle is foundational if we want to find precious human rebirth in the future. In the second to last line of the last paragraph we have just read, Namkar Pal writes, if you think of putting off your practice for some months or years, this is also mistaken, because although death is assured, its time is uncertain. This leads to the second of the preliminary practice contemplations after the precious human rebirth, and that is impermanence and death. In his introduction to this subject, while commenting on Namkar Pal's text, His Highness the Dalai Lama says that although we have found this precious human body and mind, we all wish for happiness and freedom from suffering. But happiness has its causes. It doesn't appear just out of nowhere. His Highness says, so we need to think very deeply about the causes that bring about our happiness and eliminate our problems. In order to be able to pursue the spiritual path, we must take advantage of the precious human life that we have. Of course, in order to live, we need to earn a living and do the various things that are necessary for our daily life. But we cannot place the main emphasis on acquiring money and material objects. Furthermore, money and material objects are not the sole cause for happiness. Not everybody who is wealthy is happy. When we are aware that there are a lot of people with many material possessions who are miserable and have severe mental suffering, we can't say the sole cause of happiness is material possessions. In order for our happiness to come about, it must have some prior cause. Happiness depends primarily on the state of mind. If a person's mind is happy, then whatever his or her external circumstances may be, this person continues to be happy. If someone is basically a happy person, polite, considerate of others, a cultivated and good person, then whether or not they actually believe in religion or Dharma doesn't make any difference. If we are refined and considerate of others, we build up positive force, merit, in any case. If on top of that we were to study and practice, training in the various methods of Dharma, there would be an even stronger benefit, not only in this life, but also future lives as well. So this is a very worthwhile pursuit as regards making the best use of the working basis that we have. We need to realize that this precious human body will not last forever, that however perfect our circumstances may be, this life is something that will pass. This is because everyone is subject to impermanence and death. The main point is not to waste our time. Therefore, it is extremely important to think about impermanence and how all situations pass. His Highness goes on to say that there are various ways of discussing death and impermanence in the Buddhist teachings, but here the text talks mainly of the gross aspect of impermanence, the aspect we are most familiar with, and I quote, the type that is seen by anyone who dies. His Highness continues, we would do well to consider the benefits of meditating on and building an awareness of impermanence and the disadvantages of not being aware of it. The text speaks first of these disadvantages and then of the extreme importance of remaining aware of impermanence and death. It is important because whether we believe in it or not, there are future rebirths. We may fall into one of the worst states or one of the better ones. So it's important to be aware of our negative potentials that may lead to a worse rebirth and in turn take in our actions and the things we do now, since they will affect our future. If we aren't really mindful of death all the time, even if we practice the Dharma, we won't involve ourselves fully in the Dharma or fully take it seriously. If we're truly aware of death and impermanence and of how what occurs in the future depends on what we do now, it is unnecessary to have a police keeping check on us. Our own awareness of cause and effect will act as guards and keep us from acting inappropriately. Whoever we are, looking at things in the light of the fact that we're all going to die will make us realize there's no point in fooling ourselves or acting in an uncaring manner. At least we'll see that it is absurd to fool ourselves by acting self-destructively, since in the future we will have to face the consequences of what we've done. So it's extremely important to be aware of death and impermanence all the time. So there's something to think about over the coming week, for we have to stop now, time being up. Thanks for joining the program, and please dedicate all our positive potential to gaining enlightenment to benefit all beings everywhere. I hope you'll be with us for the next program. Until then, thanks and goodbye.